Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that whistling man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
Welcome to the Be Legendary Podcast.
Hey, I'd like to welcome our very special guest, Coach David Grace. Great college basketball coach, known reputation as being one of the best college basketball coaches in the country, and excited about this show because we're going to be talking about things that just you can't find out there if you're a coach that wants to break into college coaching. This is going to be the podcast to listen to. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Gary. It's always a pleasure to talk
with you. I appreciate it.
And get going.
Yeah, and we go way back, back in the early 2000, 2001, I think it was.
Yes.
You and I are both coaching club teams in Phoenix, Arizona. And now look where we're at now. So now yes. You're the man in college basketball.
No, I don't know about that.
I know. But we're going to get right into it. One thing about Coach Grace is, and I've observed over the last, I don't know how many years, he has risen in this profession, a profession that's very difficult to do. And what we're going to do is find out from Coach Grace himself kind of just how he did it. I know he's not going to give away too many secrets, but a great outline for you out there that want to either make it in college coaching or you're already there, but you want to work your way up. So we're going to start out. I want to find out from Coach Grace your very first college coaching job.
Sacramento State.
Wow.
Took a $20,000 pay cut, slept on the floor in the locker room.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So tell us about when you got there. Obviously, probably not what you expected at the college level, but why don't you kind of go through that a little bit?
Well, when I first got there, I went into the gym, and I was totally shocked at how bad the gym was. And I love Sacramento State. I love the city. I'm a big fan of the Hornets. It's my first job, and I'll always be grateful. A beautiful campus. There was great people there. We had a great AD. We had great coaching staff. And but when I got there, the gym is a bad high school gym. Six rows on each side, I believe, and they're all bleacher seats for the most part. And so that was the first reaction when I got there is like, you know, I know they hadn't been Division I for very, very long. And, you know, if that place ever gets a gym, it would be the gym of the Big Sky Conference. And I love Sacramento State, but that was the first impression.
Yeah, I remember when you got there. Now, obviously, before you thought about going into college coaching, obviously that is not at all what you expected. So once you got there, how did you handle that? And obviously you did a great job there. Why don't you kind of go through that?
Well, I was like a kid in the candy store because I reached my partial dream. Both my dream was to coach in college, Division I, and I got to reach that. And my other part of that dream is I want to be a Division I head coach one day, and I'm still on that journey. So, but to get there and to be at Sacramento State, you know, we struggled financially. I remarried. I had four children. Had custody of my children as well. So, but we made it work, and I learned an awful lot that year. I learned what to do and what not to do, and was able to land the freshman player of the year in that conference, and then Vinny McGee. And I'm very proud of him because he's assistant coach now at the University of San Francisco. Played at McClymonds and was able to land him right away. That's my first recruit. He played for the Oakland Soldiers, and he was the freshman player of the year in that car. Never got to coach him, though. I was only there 1 year.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very thankful for Jerome Jenkins was the head coach to take a chance on me. And I also learned, how different the college game is to the high school game. You know, it's just a different level, and I got to know that right away.
So after you mentioned something that always is, you know, when you recruit players, you pour your heart and soul into that, and then you end up having to leave, which is really, you can't control that. So I know that's very difficult. But one thing about Coach Grace I've noticed too, he keeps in contact of all the players he's recruited, which is, again, something just not done. You know, you leave, you get another job, you forget, you know, generally they kind of forget about who they recruited and worry about who they're recruiting in the present. And that's one thing that you did not do. And I know that for a fact. Again, a quality you have that just that's an exception to the rule or the norm. So Sacramento State, you leave. Tell us about how that went about, you know, you applying or kind of how you did that.
Well, you know, I was, you know, I'll never forget what happened. I was in the office with Jerome Jenkins, and we had finished the season. So we were talking about the team and what we needed for next year, and we didn't have any money to go out, you know, but I was going to go out on my own dime to bring us some players so we can get better. And so I was in the office with him, and then I received a phone call from Jesse Evans, who was the head coach of the University of San Francisco. And Jesse called, and I felt kind of awkward because I was in the office with Jerome, and Jerome said, "David, do you need a little time to talk on the phone?" And I said, "Yeah, if you don't mind, can I step out?" So I did. I came back in, and he said, it's another coach wanting you, right?" And I said, "Yeah, it is." And I knew Jesse. Jesse recruited some of my kids in high school. He was the assistant coach at Arizona when they won a national title with Lute Olson. So I knew him, and, you know, and he offered me, he doubled my salary almost, and he brung me up, and I went into the WCC. So I couldn't return that down. I felt bad for Jerome, but Jerome, you know, he understood because that's part of the business. And he was happy that, you know, at least we got Vinny McGee. So he did well with Vinny. So. And we stay in touch to this day. I try to stay in touch with everybody. You know, life is short, man. It's more than just basketball. And I tell kids they always got me for life, and coaches as well.
That's a great story. So, you know, you mentioned USF. You know, I coached at USF for 6 years, so I know all about USF. So you get there. Tell us about, you know, your first impression when you got there. And then talk about the end of your career at USF, which I think is fascinating. So why don't you go ahead and go into that?
Well, when I got there, we actually had a nice gym. Way better than the one at Sac State. So
Memorial Gym.
Yeah, it's a real nice gym. It's not an arena, but it's real nice. And the great history of San Francisco, you know, the coaches like yourself and all the great coaches that were there before me. And all the history, you know, the Bill Russells, you know, you can go down the list of all the great players that played there. And it was in one of the most incredible cities in the world, in San Francisco. And even though I got a jump in pay raise, the cost of living jumped up as well. So we barely made that, you know. So I was just happy to be there. You know, Coach Evans gave me a lot of responsibility. I did every scout on that year. Which is unheard of. I did most of the recruiting, and he really allowed me to learn. Uh-huh. And, you know, we're playing Louisville, you know, Rick Pitino. So I'm doing Louisville scout, you know, and of a Hall of Fame coach, against a Hall of Fame coach. So knowing all his plays and all he do, it was a great learning experience for me that year. Mm-hmm. There were some other sides to it that I really learned from as well. Halfway through that season, Debbie Gorman, who was the AD at the time, she was brand new. She told Jesse Evans to say that he was sick or whatever, and they were going to bring in Eddie Sutton. So, you know, that was the bit side of the business, that it was a business, and it's not always you know, up and up. So Eddie Sutton came in, which was another opportunity for me to learn from a Hall of Fame coach with over 800 wins. And, you know, he helped me. He really did. He really took time out. You know, I did the scout of the first game at Weber State. And then, you know, obviously, you know, there was some other stuff that went on, but, I really learned a lot from Eddie Sutton. I learned from Jesse Evans, and also learned the negative side of the business of an AD coming in wanting to make a change. And so from there on, I actually took a job back at Deer Valley High School. We had beaten them in the state title game. We won by 21 points, and the AD remembered that. So he wanted to hire me, and I did for – and I was the coach for, what, 2 months? Two months. And then Craig Robinson, Michelle Obama's brother, gets Oregon State. I didn't know him. He calls me and wants to do an interview, and he flies down to the Phoenix airport. We do a two-hour interview in the airport, and he gets back on the plane and goes to Corvallis, and he hired me. You know, so I really thought the world of that. And I move up to Oregon State, and was the director of basketball hops for just a couple months. A guy named Robert Eichardt, who runs BCI AAU program in Los Angeles, was going to be the third assistant. And I didn't know Robert at the time. And Robert was going through the summer AAU. And then after that, he was going to come up to Corvallis. Well, during that AAU period, I asked Craig Robinson if I could go out, since I'd already taken the test and I was assistant coach already in San Francisco. And he allowed me to go out. And before that July period was up, we were able to land Roberto Nelson and Joe Burton. And Roberto was a Pac-12 scoring champion. And then Joe Burton, who's still playing to this day, broke all kinds of records up at Oregon State, led an assist all 4 years that he was there. So, Robert decides not to come up, and Craig Robinson moved me up to assistant coach. So that's how I got into the Pac-10 back then, and then it became Pac-12.
There's two things I want to point out. One, when you got to USF, and this really does not happen, especially for a new assistant coach, him letting you take over the scout and handle that. Usually it's somebody that's already on staff, or even they do it themselves. So what a great opportunity for you, and that's a tribute to you of what Coach Evans thought of you, but that's number one. Second is the business side, and for the people that aren't involved in college coaching that want to get in, you know, that's just a fact of life with that business. You might, like Jesse Evans asking to step down, had nothing to do, in my opinion, with his coaching ability. It had to do with getting a big name like Eddie Sutton. It was like a one-shot deal to get the publicity, which USF got, you know. So that's another that, you know, sometimes coaches are let go for a business side that has nothing to do with their ability to coach.
Very true.
Now, the other thing is the fact that the Oregon State, Coach Robinson, called you and you didn't even know him. Called you at a high school in Arizona. So I'm very curious to find out how that went down, how he found out about you, because you're now only into your, what, third year college coach?
Yeah.
When he did that? Yeah. So kind of explain that. And I know you're not one to talk about your ability and stuff, but obviously there's something that you had done that caught his eye.
Well, I think, you know, Doug Stewart was on his staff as well. And when they came out, they didn't have anybody with West Coast ties. You know, they're coming from Brown University. And, you know, word got around that my work ethic was what it was. They know they respected I did 20 years in the Air Force. They knew I wasn't going to cheat. You know, they knew I was going to do it the right way. And I think they respected that. You know, I'm very connected with multiple AAU programs, so they needed players because they were taking over a program that went 0-18 in the Pac-10. So, and they respected my integrity. And you know, like Craig Robinson used to always say, "Hey, we can't cheat because we won't be on ESPN. We'll be on CNN with President's brother-in-law." So I think they really respected that.
So, moving forward, you're at Oregon State. How many years?
5 years.
5 years. Tell us, and that I'm assuming that's kind of where you got most of your education as a college basketball coach. Kind of tell us, you know, what you learned, the things that you learned that weren't good, that you changed, you know, what I'm talking about, and the things that you took with them with yourself to your next job?
Well, I got to learn the Princeton offense from Craig Robinson. You know, I also got to see what it's like to coach at the highest level in college basketball in the Pac-10 and then become the Pac-12. So I got to do scouts against some of the best coaches in the world. I was able to, see the recruiting side of the Pac-10 and the Pac-12 going from a small college town in Corvallis, which is not really easy to get to, and to be able to have great success there. I mean, we led that league in scoring and running the hybrid Princeton offense. We had number one draft. I mean, first round draft picks out of there. We had a great run. We won 78 games while I was there, and that hadn't happened 20 years before Gary Payton was there. So we recruited great classes, and so there was a lot of great things happened. I learned how to recruit against other Pac-12 player, Pac-10 and Pac-12. You know, we got Roberto Nelson. I got Roberto Nelson from UCLA. And you do that off of relationships. And, those were a lot of the positives. Some of the negatives was, it's hard to, you're competing with your hand behind your back because the talent level per se is not like it is in L.A. So you got to get on an airplane and go to different places and get talent. We did that. We overcome that. But we had one arm tied behind our back. Sometimes you don't always get the call like you do in Pauley Pavilion as you do in Gill Coliseum, you know. So I learned that real quick when I went to UCLA, you know. So, overall, Craig Robinson was tremendous to work for. I'm a big fan of his. I'm so glad and happy that he's at the NABC as the chairman. Is what we need in coaching, and. I still stay in touch with the staff. They're all doing great things. And we had a great administration there at Oregon State. I think it's a sleeping giant. I think you can win big there. And we had a great run there.
Uh-huh. So Oregon State, and you mentioned, you say, so when you left Oregon State, talk to them about how that went down and where you landed and how that was your experience there.
Yeah, it's crazy because Steve Alford hired me. He didn't know me either. And it's a great story with that. I was recruiting Craig Neal's son. That's Noodles. Noodles was associate head coach at University of New Mexico where Steve was. So the year before Steve gets UCLA, Craig Neal thought he was going to get Colorado State. So he really liked how I recruited his son, and he asked me if I wanted to come and join his staff at Colorado State. Well, that didn't happen because he didn't get the job. So when Steve got the UCLA job, Craig called me right away and said, hey, I want you to come aboard with me in New Mexico, but I want to sit down with you first at the Final Four. So I said, okay. So I fly out to the Final Four, and I land in my phone has got like 30 text messages, and I look at them and they said that Steve Alford is very interested in you at UCLA. So I was like in shock. So I called a couple people that I knew, and then all of a sudden I get a phone call from Steve Alford, and he says, hey, I hear we're in the same hotel. Can you interview with me in an hour? That was 8 p.m. that night. So I said, sure, and then my mind said I was going to interview at New Mexico. So now I'm trying to do all the history of UCLA, try to get all the facts I can to be ready for that interview and get to find all the things I can about Steve. And then I get 15 minutes after that, I get a text from Noodles and Craig, and he says, hey, are you interviewing at UCLA? I said, yeah. He said, well, you can't interview at New Mexico then. I started laughing. And so I called him, and, he said, Grace, I can give you way more money than Steve could. Now, we got to remember, Steve and Craig are best friends. So they talk all the time. So So I said, you know, I got to go do this interview. It's UCLA, man. I got to go do it. So I went and did the interview. At the end, this is very important, I think, for people to realize. In the interview went 2 hours. And halfway through the interview, we're up on the top floor in a suite. And Coach Alford's family is in the suite. So his daughter walks in, and she's a sophomore in high school at the time. And I stood up when she came in, and I went over and introduced myself to her. And then I went back over and sat down. Well, after the interview, I'm going to tell you why that's important. After the interview, Coach Neal said, Coach Alford said, you know, you got any questions? I said, yeah, when are you going to make the decision? Because I have other opportunities I'm going to interview this weekend. And he said, well, who are you going to interview with? And I said, well, I'm supposed to interview with New Mexico. He starts laughing. He said, oh, don't worry about that. So then I told him I'm going to interview the next day with Grand Canyon. Dan Marley had just taken the job, and he wanted to interview me. And he said, is that a D1 or a D2? So he's joking. You know, Coach Alford has a sense of humor. So then I said, you got anything else? I said, yeah, I got USC on Monday. Then he got serious because that was his rival. And he said, well, I'll give you a call tomorrow morning before your interview with Grand Canyon. I'll decide probably then. I said, thank you. So I go out. The next day I come, 11:55, maybe 11:50. I ain't heard from him. So I'm thinking I'm not getting it. And then he calls me and he says, hey, I'm running late. My son Bryce Offer was in a 3-point shooting contest. And I had some other obligations. He said, go ahead and go to the Grand Canyon interview, but I need to know Craig Robinson's number. Can you give it to me? So I did. And so I go through the interview at Grand Canyon, and then I'm walking out of the Final Four, and as you know, I'm in a suit, and I'm in the main lobby. So everybody's coming up to me saying, where are you interviewing? And then Craig Robinson walks around the corner, and I had told Craig because I didn't know about these interviews till that night, you know. So he asked me what was going on. I told him about all the interviews I got. And he said, okay. And I said, Steve Offer's supposed to call you. He said, cool. So at that point, I just stayed in the lobby. And maybe an hour later, Craig walks around. You know, Craig was very popular back then because of the Barack Obama thing. And he walks back. He said, hey, is this is Steve's number? I said, yeah. He says, I'll call him. So he calls him. I go and change. About an hour later, Steve Alford calls me and says, hey, you want to go to dinner? So I said, sure. So I go to dinner. He's not talking to me. It's like five other people. And he ain't saying nothing to me. So I'm eating. I don't know anybody at the table. I'm eating. I'm just eating and not saying. I'm like, why are you bringing me here, man? So after he got finished, he was joking and stuff with other people. Then he turns to me and he says, hey, David, you know, in my 22 years of coaching, I never hired anybody I didn't know. I said, sir, you said that 3 times in the interview, and I really respect that. You really appreciate that. I said, but Craig Robinson didn't know me neither, and Jerome Jenkins didn't know me either. And he said, yeah, I know. And Craig Robinson told me to. He gave you a great review. He said, you're a great guy. He said, your integrity is where it needs to be in this business. And he said, but the most important thing, you see that young lady at the end of the table? He said that no one has ever stood up and introduced themselves when she came in the door. And that right there, she said, I better hire you because I'll have it rough in the house if I don't hire you. They didn't hire you. So that's how I got hired at UCLA.
That's a great story. Unbelievable. In fact, you know, I'm like stressed waiting, you know, to find out you dragged this thing on. It's a good thing that you're not OCD like me, because I would have said right away, hey, I need to know Coach Alford now, instead of you being patient like you were. But the fact that you stood up and shook her hand, that tells exactly the kind of person you are. so important for the coaches that are listening to this, because that has nothing to do with X's and O's or what a great recruiter you are. It has to do with people skills and you know, big heart and empathetic. And so a great story, you know, can go on and on about you. But anyway, so you get the job. You know, I know Coach Alford. He recruited one of my players, Tony Snell, and I know Noodles real well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had me right there in that story. Love it, love it. So you get the job. So take us through now. You get to UCLA, which obviously is going to be a lot different than Oregon State and USF and Sacramento State, because you're right in the thick of L.A. where all the players are. So why don't you walk us through that?
Yeah, and it's the most pressure-packed job I've ever had in basketball. I mean, it's not close to when I fought in the war, but in basketball, it was every day was pressure to win. You know, they flew banners over the school at UCLA, and one of Steve's fired, and we went to three Sweet 16s. There's not too many coaches on the planet that's been to three Sweet 16s. You know, and that's the pressure of winning there. They want national titles. Every time we came back off the Sweet 16 wins, there was nobody there to greet us. They were mad at us, you know. So I learned an awful lot about the pressure of winning and winning now. You know, they don't want to win later. They want to win now. And and they want to get the Final Four. So I got to learn that. I got a lot of gray hairs there. A lot of gray hairs, you know. You know, if people say, oh, it's easy to recruit to UCLA, it's not as easy as you think, because you're not going up against the lower half of the Pac-12. You're going up against Calipari. You're going up against Kansas. You're going up against Duke, North Carolina, the other blue bloods that got just as much as you got when you're dealing with getting kids, you know, and I think we did a great job in that part. And I also learned a lot from Steve. You know, Steve has a lot of wins in this business, and he knows how to coach. And he's doing a great job at Nevada. And you know, I learned not only, you know, coaching from him, but I also learned, you know, we're playing Kentucky. We had a winning record against Kentucky. We went in Kentucky, beat Kentucky, and then we went to Arizona and won at Arizona. No other school's ever done that in the same year. So learning those scouts, learning to go against the best in the world, you know, in coaching, and learning the X's and O's from them is prepared me greatly to be a head coach. And, you know, to do it at such a high level at UCLA, there's no other higher level than UCLA. You know, I was right up there with Duke and North Carolina and Kansas. So I learned a lot from that.
Go ahead.
I learned, you know, I tell people all the time, if I went to a high school in L.A., there's people on the internet saying, why am I not at another school? Or why am I not over here? Never happy. Never happy. Right. And they know where I'm going sometimes before I know where I'm going, which was crazy. You know what I mean? So and then you lose a game. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lot of stress till you win the next one.
Right. So a couple things. One, did that change your opinion of if and when you're in a job search, taking the job doesn't mean, you know what I'm saying? You know, from what I'm hearing, UCLA, it's a no-win situation.
Well, you know, if somebody called me to be a coach there, a head coach there, I'd go right back, because it's also addicting. Uh-huh. And when I say addicting is, you get the chance to play against the best, and you get a chance to compete against the best. You know, you know, I recruited Kevon Looney out of Milwaukee, and we beat him over Duke. You know, that's a great feeling. You know, we go, you know, to walk out of Rupp Arena, 22,000 people on top of you, you know, and have them quiet with 5 minutes left to go in the game. That's a feeling that, like no other, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right.
So playing the Sweet 16s in big arenas, you know, going up to Gonzaga and beating Gonzaga at Gonzaga, there's no greater feeling. So I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Love it. And something else too that I don't think people out there, in this profession realize, you know, you went and you worked for Coach Alford, but Coach Alford played Indiana for Bobby Knight. So obviously he's got some stuff in his philosophy or program as a carryover that he learned. You know, that's a great learning opportunity for you too. Any assistant that works for him, you know, I don't know if that is ever a factor in your job search when you're looking for a job, but where the coach came from is in my mind is huge. So did he talk? Did he have much to say? You know, could you tell that what he did in his program came from other programs?
Yes, we ran plays that Bobby Knight ran. You know, he still runs that triangle, what we call triangle, where, you know, you put two bigs down on each block and then you run guards through it and stuff. We had great success with it. That's a Bobby Knight play. There's a few others. He loves Bobby Knight. He talks about Bobby Knight all the time, you know. And he learned a lot from Bobby Knight, you know, and he's an Indiana kid, so anything dealing with Indiana he loves. So he shared a lot of Bobby Knight's philosophies to us on the court, especially the X's and O's.
So obviously Coach Alford's run ends at UCLA.
So
then what?
You know, at the end of the run at UCLA, it was great, you know, and it was just time to move on. And so I move on and from UCLA and Y. King Jones, he called me and offered me a job at Cal. And I thought the greatest thing that was just unbelievable for me because, you know, I got to stay in the Cal system, you know, California. Cal Berkeley and UCLA are in the same system, so it helped me in my retirement. It was still in the Pac-12. Obviously, I love the Bay. I lived there, and it was a great opportunity to go up there and be a Cal Bear. So I really enjoyed my year at Cal. You know, in a lot of ways, it was a lot different than being at UCLA. And, you know, the only thing happened was there was a new AD there, and he wanted to make a change, and he made a change with Y. King, and so we go from there. Uh-huh.
So just to let all the listeners know, you've been very blessed.
Yeah.
And I know you know that, but from Sacramento State to USF, Oregon State, UCLA, and Cal is unheard of from all the people that I know. You know what I mean? You get one great job after another, which is just unbelievable. And that's a tribute to you, testimony to you of kind of person you are and your skill and your ability to get along with people. Heart, big heart is a big thing. So then you're at Cal. Tell us what you got from that experience that you're able to take.
Well, you get to see it from a different light. You know, you're at a prestigious academic school. That's trying to rebuild, and the growth the growing pains that you got to go through in rebuilds. I saw it at Oregon State. I saw it at Sacramento State. You know, we were going to go through those pains of turning a program around, and to do it with really, you know, Cal's the only Pac-12 school without a practice facility. We have to use the rec gym, you know. Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
There's some limitations there. It's a lot of differences there. Mm-hmm. People don't really realize that. There for a while, they struggle with money in the administration side of it. So I think it's over with now. I think they're doing a lot better. So we had to overcome those things, and you know, just a different look at things. You know, Y. King ran things differently, you know, but I got to learn from him. Another thing, like we talked about, Y. King coached for Rick Pitino, so you know, being one thing right, he learned a lot from Coach Pitino, you know, who's a Hall of Fame coach. So again, I get to learn that, and that was, I'm very thankful for that,
right. That's great. And again, there's kind of a theme going on here, and we're going to get into it after this. But, you know, your network that you've been establishing and building every year in coaching continues to help you as you move forward And we'll touch upon that again. So you're at Cal. So now after Cal, walk us
well,
through
you know,
that situation.
Well, you know, where then you landed. I go to the Final Four. I was supposed to meet with Coach Fox at the Final Four about staying on at Cal. Mark Fox took over. And while I was at the Final Four, I saw Dana Altman, the head coach of Oregon. He comes up to me and says, "Hey, David, Lon Kruger at Oklahoma is very interested in you. Can I get your number? I'm going to give it to him because I think he's going to have an opening at Oklahoma. He'd like to speak with you." And I thought the world of that because I never coached with Dana Altman. You know, and so Lon Kruger calls me. And we interview at Oklahoma. I mean, I interviewed at the Final Four with Coach Kruger, who's going to be a Hall of Fame coach, if not already. And I was really excited about that. But during the interview, he said, "Hey, Coach, I'm waiting on one of my assistants. He might get the Kennesaw State job. But can you wait like a month or whatever it takes for him to decide?" And I said, "Sure." And while I'm waiting, Jerry Stackhouse gets the job at Vanderbilt. So I got to know Jerry very well by recruiting Brandon Ingram when I was at UCLA. And we finished second. You know, he stayed home at Duke. But we had Brandon out on an official visit, and I was very close with the family. He comes from a great family. And Brandon Ingram's from the same hometown as Stackhouse. He played in Stackhouse Elite AAU program. So I got to know Jerry really well through that. And then Jerry used to always say, "Hey, I'm going to try to be a head coach in the NBA or if North Carolina opens." So when he got the job, I was shocked to see Vanderbilt. And I, called him just to congratulate him and mess with him. You know, like, Vanderbilt's not North Carolina, just to mess with him. And so I called him and he said, "Hey, Gracie, I should be calling you. What's it going to take to get you off of the West Coast?" And I was shocked to hear that, you know. So I just told him, "Make me associate head coach and offer me this much money and sign me for 2 years and I'll come." Not thinking that he was actually going to do that. And he did it. 2 days later, maybe 3 days later, he calls me back and says, "Hey, I got it done. When you coming?" So that's how I got to Vanderbilt.
Amazing.
And, you know, I went there because I was still waiting on Oklahoma and I wasn't sure if that assistant was going to leave or not. So.
Right, right. Again, unbelievable opportunity. And what's important, what I see outside looking in, is the job you did at every step of the way. You know, it's, you know, we have this thing where as a player, you never know who's watching. And that's exactly the same thing right here. You never know. These coaches, they have no idea who's watching, who, you know, I hope they understand how important that is. Now, a thing I want to talk about is the networking. Talk to us about that and how now I know some people have to force themselves, especially some head coaches, you know, they have to force themselves to greet and talk to people. That's one thing. That's a gift you have. You love talking to people. So talk to us about your network and how that started building and when you realized, or if you've always realized how really important that is.
Well, thank you. And I started networking when I got the dream of being, that's 1997, when I got the dream of being a Division I assistant and a Division I head coach. When I was coaching AAU, I would try to befriend the other coaches, you know, and get to know them because eventually I'm going to have to recruit their kids. Mm. So the networking started there, and then it got broader with getting with the college coaches as well. I networked with Coach Lute Olson when I coached Jared Bayless here in Phoenix and got to know Coach Olson very well. He was instrumental in helping me get the Sacramento State job. He made a call for me. You know, I couldn't do it without Ato Puna Emma over at Compton Magic. I coached in the program as well, you know, and just networking with just different people in the college state. I do it today. You know, I watched who won and who lost today, and I'll hit these coaches up. And you know, they always like to hear from people after wins. So You know, I'll text with three or four of them tonight before I go to bed and tell them that they're doing a great job, because it's a lonely, it's lonely when you're a head coach. So you like to hear from people. Yeah,
absolutely. And also too, you know, people know when right. they're BS, someone's getting BS'd. They know you're not BS, right. and they know it's coming from yeah. your heart, and that's why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And that's a key. And that's something that you can't right. teach somebody how to do. You just got to tell them, you know, and it's so important for these coaches that want to move up and break in. Now, here's a question for you. You know, you worked for some great, great programs and great head coaches. In your opinion, which I would say expert opinion because of the experience you got, what is generally the difference between, let's say, number one assistant, associate head coach, same thing in my mind, compared to being a head coach? And obviously there are different responsibilities because they got to deal with the public and stuff. But in your opinion, what really are the
well,
two differences?
You know, on losses, it's a big difference because that number one assistant don't have to take the heat like that head coach is going to take. You know, so that's uh-huh. a big difference. You know, a win and a loss, it goes to the head coach. It don't go to the associate head coach or the assistant coach in a lot of ways, you know. So mm-hmm. when you move over and you get to become that head coach, it's a different type of pressure. But it's the type of pressure that I would love, because I would want that responsibility. Put that thing on me, because then I'll have a greater say. You know, the head coach has the ultimate say. Mm-hmm. So you're always, as associate head coach or the number one assistant, suggesting and asking. You know, you're never saying, hey, we're going to do it this way. You know, because it's not your program. It's the head coach's program. And you gotta make sure you know that mm-hmm. head coach well and try to cater to what he likes. And you know, especially – you know, for day-to-day operations, from X's to O's, from dealing with kids, dealing with discipline, and also in recruiting. You know, so it's a big difference mm-hmm. from that seat that's just, what, 18 inches apart.
Yeah. That's right. So here's a question that you know, I've never heard asked or talked about, but and I'll start out with me, and then we'll go. I worked for four head coaches, one of which loved recruiting and was good at it. The other three hated recruiting, you know, so they weren't into it. And to be, and you please give your definition, but a great recruiter, you got to be passionate and love recruiting to be able to do that. So I didn't have the luxury of having a head coach that loved recruiting. I can't imagine what that would be like. So, and me looking at you as obviously being a head coach very soon, what an opportunity for the staff, you being a great recruiter. But talk about that, if, you know, your experiences, if you've had head coaches that loved it. And I know we talked about an example in Arizona that you brought up. You know, that would be I think they'd love to hear that story, because it's exactly the reason
yeah,
why.
I've worked with guys that didn't like recruiting. You know, some of them even hated it. You know, it's a lot that goes on in recruiting that, you know, it takes a lot of time to do. And you got other responsibilities. But, you know, it's very difficult to have success these days with head coaches that don't recruit because of social media, because of a lot of other things. I shared experience with you that I'll share with everybody else. Like Sean Miller will get on the phone and speak to a recruit for like 40 minutes. And then at the end of the 40 minutes, he'll ask the kid, hey, is any other head coach talk to you today? And then if the kid says no, he says, oh, they're probably talking to somebody else that they think's a priority. You know what I mean? Because, Sean loves
exactly.
recruiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Before
yeah.
he became a head coach, he told Eddie Schilling, who was in his wedding, and I worked with Eddie Schilling at UCLA. He said, when I become a head coach, I'm still going to recruit like I'm assistant coach. So, you know, the guys that love recruiting gets players. And you can overcome it as assistant with coaches that don't like to recruit, but you got to do a whole lot, man. And you got to do a whole lot. And it's very, very hard. But, you know, so I've tried to overcome it in a few stops. In a few stops, I was in paradise because my head coach loved to recruit.
Right. Great, great, great advice. And again, a testament to you because you are a great recruiter. You know, obviously, next stop, head coaching job. And I want to reserve this opportunity now. When you get your head job, you're coming on the Be Legendary podcast again. Now take us through your career.
I would love that. Thank you so much, man. That would be great.
Absolutely. This has been a great, great informational podcast for people that want to get into coaching, that are already in coaching, even if they're a Division I number associate head coach. Advice that you've given. Is there any last piece of advice or anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, you know, I always tell people you only need one yes. You're going to get a lot of no's, man. I got a ton of no's before I got that one yes at Sacramento State. And I didn't even know it was coming. You know, I had taken another high school job, and next thing you know, I get a phone call from Jerome Jenkins, who I did not know at all. And I did it. I got it through my networking, and I was so thankful. But I got told no 100 million times, man, and only needed the one yes. So don't ever give up on your dreams. You know, do more with your 24. I tell kids that all the time. I said, and like you said, Gary, that you never know who's watching. You never know who's looking. And if you do the right thing in your 24 hours and you show integrity, you know, I think, and you treat people right, you're always going to be all right.
Fantastic advice, Coach Grace. And we're going to let you go. Thank you so much again for coming
Thank
on.
Thank you so
and
much.
Look forward to talking to you.
It means
soon.
A lot. All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Hug with today's little ditty. Did you know? Nike's iconic slogan, "Just Do It," was inspired by convicted murderer Gary Gilmore. When asked any last words, Gilmore replied, "Let's do it." Nike's representative tweaked it, presented it to Nike, and the rest is history.
Thanks for joining us this week for the Be Legendary podcast. If you really enjoyed and got some information out of our show, please subscribe. It helps us tremendously. And make sure you visit our website, 24-seconds.com. See you next time.